This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. As we savor the waning days of summer, we thought we'd take some time on the show to contemplate New England's favorite savory summertime treat.
That is, of course, lobster, a resource so ubiquitous, so abundant in our part of the world, that it may be a surprise to some that it's not that sustainable.
Or so says one scientist who's authored a controversial new paper. More on that in a bit.
But first, boom and bust is actually nothing new in the relationship between lobster and mankind. The population in the Gulf of Maine has fluctuated wildly with the changing tastes of a very fickle public, all of which is chronicled in food writer Elizabeth Townsend's new book, Lobster, A Global History.
I sat down with Townsend at her home in Concord, and the interview starts with me asking her a question that radio people often ask just to test out the microphone.
Firstly, let me just ask you what you had for breakfast this morning.
Scrambled eggs with cherry tomatoes, but I did have lobster last night.
You did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I figured at the end of this project, you wouldn't want to have anything to do with lobsters.
Just, no. You know, I started out loving to eat lobster, but now I'm thinking I love the animal more than I ever imagined, and so I'm not tired of it a bit. So here I am.
With your lobster earrings. Tell me about why you like to eat lobster. I have a theory that, you know, part of the reason why we like it today is because there's some ceremony involved in it. You know, our food has gotten so easy. It's brought to us almost pre-digested, you know? Whereas, like, you really got to crack these things open, and there's a technique, and you have, and it's like unwrapping a present.
It is so delicious to be on the Maine coast at a lobster shack, and it comes steaming out of those pots. It's on your plate with usually an ear of corn and the butter and the crackers, and you're sitting out there with that gorgeous Maine scenery. And it is really a pleasure to take that crustacean apart and savor. I think maybe it's the savoring of every morsel that comes out. You have to work for it. I don't know. Do you ever go into the body, the cavity of the lobster? There's some gorgeous little tender bits on the inside of the body.
Have really?
You seen those?
Yeah. How do you get at those?
Well, you break off the outer shell, the body part, and then you split it down the middle. And in these little cavities, not the feathery bits, mm-hmm. which are the gills, but the cavity are these really tender, lovely pieces of white meat.
Oh, that's kind of like a crab, like the carapace
right.
of a crab.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, the tail, who doesn't like the tail? And who doesn't love the claws, the gold standard of lobster?
I'm a claw man myself. I enjoy the claws a lot more than the tail.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're spectacular. I don't know if you know how big lobsters were when the Puritans got here, but
no.
They were, if you take it from the tip of their claw to their tail flipper, they could be 5 to 6 feet long. They could be 16 to 45 pounds in weight. They were enormous animals, crustaceans, not animals, crustaceans.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine slogging home with one of those over your shoulder? I mean,
why don't we see them like that anymore?
Because we fished them out like we do most things. You know, fished out most of the large ones, and so now we mostly have smaller ones.
Left unmolested, they would grow that big?
They could. You know, depending on the climate change and the pollution and you know, the way that some of the fishing vessels catch fish with all the bycatch. Yeah, mostly I think they might.
So how old are the lobsters that we end up eating these days?
The ones we eat are like 7 or 8 years old, maybe. I mean, it takes them that long to get to the pound and a quarter, say, size that's legal.
But to get to the size of a small man, they have to be 50 years old, something like that?
Yeah, they do. They have to be very old.
Okay.
Now, one thing you should know is that you shouldn't eat over a 3 or 4 pound lobster because you're eating up the brood stock. 1 5-pound female lobster can produce as many eggs as 27 1-pound female lobsters. It's a phenomenal difference in productivity.
Now, up to this point, we've been talking about only one kind of lobster.
That's right. There are two predominant kinds, the clawed. We're talking about one of them, the Homarus americanus, which you will hear it called the American lobster, the Atlantic lobster, Canadian, Maine lobster. It's all the same species. And then there are the clawless lobsters that are in the warm waters. Ours are in the cold waters. Warm waters. There are over 100 varieties of all these lobsters. They're incredibly different when you look at them.
But the lobster that we know and love here in Boston is the Maine lobster, Homarus americanus,
right? That's
right,
yeah.
And there's not much variation there, right?
No. They're the same lobster. And they might vary in color, which we would probably never see unless we went to an aquarium. They could be blue. They could be red. Sometimes they're white. And they're even two-toned lobsters. All but the white ones turn red when you cook them.
So tell me about the history of people eating these things.
So it's been a bit of an up and down ride. Native Americans really held shellfish in high regard. They were often a primary food, principal source of protein and oil. So they had them at feasts, they had them at clam bakes, and they boiled them on, and they put them on spits, roasted and dried them in the smoke. They cooked them a lot of different ways, but they loved and valued lobsters. Then in the 1600s, when the British and Puritans came to New England, they had such a mixed reaction. They came from England where sometimes the fresh fish was yucky. They didn't think it was substantial, and so they were kind of skeptical. And then gradually, New Englanders began to realize that this was actually something they could sell, they could make some money from. In the late 1800s, this amazing thing happened, Down East tourism. There were 100,000 visitors to Maine resort hotels. They ate a whole lot of shellfish, including lobster, and when they went back to Boston, Philadelphia, New York, that's what they wanted. They wanted more fresh lobster.
So wealthy people eating a lobster in Delmonico's in New York wanted to be reminded of the place up in Bar Harbor.
They did. They absolutely do. And, you know, Delmonico's, that's a great example, was what it was called, a lobster palace. It's where the actresses and famous and rich people used to go after the theater, and they would chow down on lobsters. And there were several lobster palaces in New York City.
So urbanites in Philadelphia and Boston and New York start to crave lobster. Does that ultimately change the way that the people in the lobstering communities view the lobster? Do they start to then value it more themselves?
Well, certainly when there's a huge demand like that, yeah, they absolutely think it's a bigger deal and spend more time with it. In fact, there's a recent article about the Maine lobstering industry and that they're only focusing almost on lobster now, and because we fished out a lot of the fish, and what happens if we have a crash?
How does it compare to the late 19th century?
Well, late 19th century was dicey because when lobsters became so popular, the canneries sprouted up. There were 23 canneries in Maine, and they almost wiped out the whole lobster stock.
Really?
Literally.
When was the low point?
1870s, 1880s, and thank goodness for regulations because all the states in the U.S. now on the northeastern coast have a minimum body length. In other words, they measure it from the eye down to the base of the body before the tail. And that's about 3 1/4 inches. But Maine is really special because they're the only state or government place I know that they have a maximum size too. And you might remember I mentioned earlier that if you get into hauling catching all the larger lobsters, you're wiping out your broodstock.
Elizabeth Townsend writes about food for the Boston Globe, among other places. Her new book is called Lobster, A Global History. She has a visual aid to help you wrap your mind around the 5-foot lobsters that were here in the time of the Puritans. You can see that at RadioBoston.org, along with some of the historical lobster recipes from the book. And as Townsend mentioned, there are some new doubts about the sustainability of New England's lobster industry, despite Maine's tight regulatory regime. With us to explain is Bob Stenick. He's a professor of oceanography, marine biology, and marine policy at the University of Maine. He's also a Pew Fellow in marine conservation, and he joins us now from Walpole, Maine, on the Penobscot Bay. Professor Stenick, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
So I'm terrific. You've got this paper in the current issue of Conservation Biology that has received a lot of attention. It's called Creation of a Gilded Trap by the High Economic Value of the Marine Lobster Fishery. In layman's terms, what is this gilded trap that you're talking about?
Well, my concern in terms of the gilded trap, and actually there are a bunch of authors, not just mine, is that we tend to think of the value of any fishery as a good measure of its success. But Maine has done such a terrific job, actually, of conserving their resources, as Elizabeth just explained, that we actually have a huge abundance of lobsters, and over 80% of the value comes from a single species. What we basically developed along the coast of Maine is what I call a lucrative monoculture. And my concern is that there's kind of a trapping to things that are valuable But if you put all of your investment in a single stock, you are at some risk. And I wanted the public to consider the risk that we are assuming when we have, you know, such a high percentage of the entire marine resource value of the state of Maine locked in a single species.
Well, what could happen to that species? I guess we have seen die-offs of lobster in southern New England before.
Well, what could happen to the lobster is what could happen to any species on the planet, including humans. And, for example, disease is one problem. And the problem of disease increases when critters get very abundant, and lobsters are very abundant. So it becomes a little bit like a wildfire. But I'm not suggesting for a moment that the risk of decline or collapse is any greater than it was yesterday. This paper is really to have us consider what the consequences of such an event might be for the coast of Maine and the coastal fabric and the people who depend on this species.
Well, of course, things have been in a state of change. Lobster hasn't always been the end-all, be-all of the coastal economy in Maine, right? There were other fisheries.
Absolutely. You know, that's right. There's a long history of cod, hake, haddock, halibut. You know, the very first export from the New World were codfish from New England.
And what happened to all these fish?
Well, I do think we did an awful lot of overfishing, and I think the state of Maine is in particularly bad shape in terms of its coastal groundfish. Massachusetts actually is in much better shape than Maine is.
Sure, they say Georges Bank is really coming back with a lot of these fish.
Well, Georges Bank is coming back to a degree, but Mass Bay is actually doing reasonably well for coastal codfish stocks.
I mean, we have to take some of these lobster numbers with a grain of salt because the reporting laws have changed over the years. But according to the Maine Department of Marine Resources, lobstermen were landing about 20 million pounds a year back in the 80s. And then last year, they landed 95 million pounds. Is that an indication of overfishing or of great abundance? And is that abundance in part the result of the fact that these other fish have died off?
Yeah, I think the latter is closer to the mark. That is, there's no question that the real abundance has increased. It's not just landings and it's not just reporting. Absolutely have increased. Reproductive lobsters have increased. As a matter of fact, big lobsters still exist in the coast of Maine and up in Canada. I've certainly seen them in the 35-pound range from submarines.
That's really freaky.
It absolutely is, and the fact is that we don't market them at that size, so most of the lobster traps simply don't pick them up, but they are out there. So they are very abundant. As a matter of fact, you know, most people have a desk that might be something close to 2 square meters, and the average population density that I recorded on the coast of Maine was between 1 and 2 lobsters per square meter. So imagine on your desk 2 lobsters. And that's an average for lots of the coast of Maine. That's a very high population density. Highest lobster population density in the world.
We're going to bring in another voice here. This is the Maine Lobstermen Association's president, David Cousins, who's joining us from South Thomaston, Maine. Mr. Cousins, I understand that you've been out on the water this morning. Just out of curiosity, how was the fishing?
It was all right. I just got in about 20 minutes ago, actually.
Tell us, I want to have you respond to what Professor Stenick has been talking about in detail, but firstly, just tell us, how long have you been in the fishing industry, and how have you seen it change over that time?
Well, I've been fishing since I was 12 years old, and I'm 53, so I'd say about 41 years.
41 years, and what's that arc been like? Is it easier now than it was before?
There's a lot more lobsters than there were before, but it's not easier. I mean, we have a lot more gear, a lot more boats, a lot more people doing it, a lot more tangles. It's, you know, high cost.
Well, how does the money compare to when you first started?
Well, it's in spending money, it's probably not much different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, back then we were catching half as much, and we were getting the same price as we are today. And bait was, you know, $2 a bushel, and it's now $30 a bushel. Fuel was 50 cents, 40 cents a gallon. It's now $3.50 a gallon. So
right. Those costs have just gone up and up and up.
Skyrocketed, and the price of lobsters stayed pretty much constant.
And I understand, and Professor Stanek, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the price of lobster has proven to be kind of inelastic in the marketplace. Like, it can go up and up and up, and people will still pay for it.
No, that's not quite true.
Oh.
In fact, I think that you typically will see the price of lobsters sort of reflect the nation's economic status.
Mm.
When we had our big housing crisis that launched the recession of 2008, was a terrible time for people who made their living lobstering. The price per pound dropped, fuel costs were high. But it's the first time I know of on the planet of a fisheries crisis being entirely economic because it was a record year of landings.
So let's talk about the potential for an environmental crisis in the fishery. Mr. Cousins, tell us, do you agree with Professor Stenick that fishermen in Maine might be too reliant on just this one species?
Well, I agree. Yeah, I mean, anytime you're relying on one species, you're at risk. I mean, that's just common sense. But I don't know if we can change what Mother Nature has given us. I mean, it's a combination of great conservation ethic on the lobsterman's part, great environmental conditions for the last 20 years, warm water, you know, no hurricanes to speak of, and the fish, that the predators for the baby lobsters are gone.
Right.
And so where I fish in mid-coast Maine, they haven't dragged for codfish in my lifetime within 35 miles of the shore, and there's still no codfish here. Now, Bob's right. There are codfish are coming back in Massachusetts Bay and other places, but they don't seem to be coming back here. And it's not because they're overfishing them where I am. It's simply because they're not there. And I think lobsters have replaced a lot of the creatures on bottom.
Sure. Well, so Professor Stenick, David Cousins there brings up a great question, which is what do you want people like him to do about this problem that you and your co-authors have identified?
I think the first thing is I think we should be talking about this. Absolutely agree with what Dave Cousins said about the absence of those fish, but it seems to me that this is a good time to be thinking about managing our fisheries entirely differently. We've been managing everything on a single species basis, and we haven't been thinking about the ecosystem as a whole. And I think that we could, in fact, start seeing more value, not just in terms of bringing back cod, but also other species that could be managed more effectively if we thought about the entire ecosystem. And I don't think for a second this is going to change overnight. It may not change in our lifetime. I just think we should start thinking about this and start talking about how we could do things differently to make it a safer place should anything happen to this one lucrative monoculture.
And of course, this isn't just about lobstermen on their boats. There's a whole coastal economy that is linked to lobstering. Bob or David, what would the consequences be if the lobster boom starts to decline for the broader economy?
On the coast of Maine, it would be devastation. I mean, it pretty is the economic engine that runs coastal Maine.
Yeah, and Dave lives right on Waterman Beach, where his family has lived for generations. And if we had an economic crisis, I think they would be okay. But I know a lot of lobstermen who would have to sell their homes, they'd have to move inland, and we would see a flip, a gentrification of the coast of Maine that would make it really hard for us to reestablish the kind of coastal fabric that we have today.
Professor Stanek, last question to you. So I'm a lobster consumer, and I think I speak for a lot of the listeners out there when I say I want to be a responsible lobster consumer. I want to ensure both the sustainability of the natural resource and also the livelihood of the men and women who catch them. What should I do as a consumer with this information? Should I eat more lobster, less lobster?
There's absolutely no harm in eating as many lobsters as you could stand. There are a lot of species that are overfished, and we have to be careful about consuming them. Things like bluefin tuna, there's a list of them. But there really isn't a more sustainably harvested species in the east coast of North America than the lobster, and I'd say go for it.
All right.
Very well said, Bob.
Well said. That's right. Exactly. The lobstermen agree. Bob Stenick is a professor of oceanography, marine biology, and marine policy at the University of Maine. Dave Cousins is president of the Maine Lobstermen's Association. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to be back after a short break. Up next, Sierra Hull, mandolin player extraordinaire, on coming to the Berklee College of Music.
They were being so nice to me, and I just thought, these people don't know how little I know.
Stay with us. I'm Adam Ragusea with Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is Radio Boston.